All right, we are back. Speaking with Stephen J. Harper, attorney, professor, and author about Donald J. Trump, his favorite topic, I would say. Is that what you said? That's one of your favorite topics, or least favorite?
Somewhere between most and least, probably least. But it feels like a necessary public service. Let's put it that way.
Indeed. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. And, you know, just something I didn't mention in the first segment that sort of irked me personally was that Trump at one point tried to claim that, you know, all these doctors, they're pumping their numbers up. And, of course, a lot of his people tried to say, because there's comorbidities in the death certificates, it's really only 6% of the people are truly dying of COVID, which is a misunderstanding of how death certificates work. But Trump at one point said, you know, these doctors, they get more money if someone dies from COVID. And, you know, they're smart people. So what they say is, I'm sorry that, you know, these people are all dying of COVID. And previously he said, you know, the PPE was going out, like the doctors were selling it out the back door for cash.
Yeah.
You'd think the medical profession would be more up in arms against him than they are.
Yeah, well, you know what he does? It's sort of classic projection. You know, anything bad that you can do, Trump is probably doing it already. So the best way to deal with that is to accuse other people of doing it. And he does that all the time.
As I think about doctors, and I know a fair number of doctors that are, they're kind of okay with Trump. And unfortunately, one of them who was okay with Trump in December of 2020 was wearing an improper mask and gave me COVID, a doctor.
Right.
This is the power of misinformation and disinformation.
Well, and you know, the other thing about all this too is, and Trump has figured this out. People are much happier. They're more content in their lives if they have a way of looking back and thinking things were better than they actually were. It's one of the ways that you sort of rationalize your whatever existence you have at the moment. And I think it's just probably some kind of a survival technique. I'm not a psychologist, but I've seen it so often that I'm convinced it's very real. And I do know that when you're asked to remember something, you're not actually remembering the event. You're remembering your last memory of the event. And every time you remember something, you reconstruct some version of it in your mind that fits more comfortably into the reality that you want to believe. So one of the things that I think helps Trump get through something like his mismanagement of the pandemic from earlier years is people now look back at it and say, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. But people want to look back on it and think, well, you know, we got through it. It'll be fine. And they do the same thing now with the economy. And it's like you strip away, you know, a lot of people anyway, they strip away the bad news in order to have good memories. So everything becomes the good old days, yeah. You know, and Trump's administration was a disaster at many different levels, from foreign policy to domestic policy to pandemic mismanagement. I mean, you go right down the board. I don't think he got anything right. I give him credit for one thing, I guess, and that is he did light a fire under the effort to get a vaccine for COVID, you know, this Operation Warp Speed. But boy, if you look across the field of all the things that he did, it's very hard to find good stuff, which is sort of amazing to me because, you know, you have this cult of people who just think those are the best of times. I think there's a very deep psychological phenomenon that probably explains at least some of that. Kind of magical thinking. It's a rethinking.
He reminded me of the fact that the Moyer site, and I'm not sure whether you were the author of this or not, but on the Moyer site there was one piece talking about how we've paid a lot of money in for this research for these vaccines. These companies shouldn't be raking it in afterwards.
That's true. Yeah.
And you know, something else about Donald J. Trump that he gets credit for, perhaps not deservedly, is the fact that he managed to not get us into any wars. But some people have come forward of late to say, oh, yeah, well, we had to talk him down again and again and again when he wanted to just, you know, go to fisticuffs with some other nation over this, that, or the other. And they just said he does not deserve credit for that. We do.
Yeah. He wanted to shoot rioters. He wanted to pull out the army and shoot rioters. Can we just shoot him in the legs? You know, that was his approach. Again, McMaster is the guy who said that, I think it was McMaster, one of his generals, he made some unilateral off-the-cuff announcement that, you know, he was going to bring everybody home by Christmas, you know, from Afghanistan. And all of his advisors, every single one of them said, you can't do that. It'll be a bloodbath. And so they finally backed off of that. But that's what he wanted to do.
But yet he did set a hard deadline, which Joe Biden got stuck with, which because they were ill prepared, there were more casualties perhaps than necessary, which Trump a couple days ago tries to take advantage of by taking some of the victims' families to Arlington and shoot a commercial where it's breaking all the rules. It's unbelievable.
Yep, exactly.
And he's responsible for those deaths as much as or more than Biden.
Right. He laid the groundwork for it. He set the essential ground rules that Biden was stuck with. Absolutely right. Just like he pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, and Iran now is on the cusp of developing a nuclear weapon.
Boy.
Again, that's the same kind of thing. The Obama administration had negotiated that. Anything that was Obama tried to strip away from the country, everything. Anything that had any kind of imprint, an Obama imprint, he tried to strip it away. And I could tell you, in my opinion, the minute that psyche began, the minute that mindset began, was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner when Obama was speaking and they showed Trump, and because Obama was speaking about how, we don't have time to play games involving birth certificates. We don't have time for that nonsense. There's the real business with the country to do. And you could just see Trump just turn red as a beet.
Obama is a pretty good joke teller, and he had the audience in stitches, and the butt of his jokes were Trump.
That's right. I think that more than anything else that I can think of was the moment that he decided that he was going to run for president, and if he won, he was going to strip away anything that had any kind of mark of Obama's success on it. And that's what he's been trying to do.
Well, he certainly has a contrary nature. You're talking about McMaster. I just saw an interview a couple of days ago where I believe it was McMaster outlining as how they would try to brief him. And, of course, he resisted all briefings. He just didn't think he needed to be briefed on anything. He would go on instinct. And at one point, there was problems in Venezuela with riots, and they kept saying to him, whatever you do, don't go out there and say we're going to get militarily involved. So what does he do? He walks out with Rex Tillerson and Nikki Haley and McMaster and says, I'm not ruling anything out, including military involvement. And you look at the expression on their faces, they're just like, oh, God.
Right. Well, I think at one point he wanted to bomb Mexico, stop the immigration, I mean, the guy is a fount of horrible, world-destructive ideas.
Well, Tillerson, I mean, I can't think of any other Secretary of State in my lifetime that left office and referred to his former boss as an effing moron.
Right.
That's breaking new ground.
Yes, exactly. I think it's safe to say he will not be invited to Mar-a-Lago anytime soon.
Well, you know, Tillerson is hardly the only person that has voiced such an opinion.
Yeah, probably right.
I mean, including people that work with him on The Apprentice, people that were in business with him in the casino world in Atlantic City. Their attitude's like, how do you lose money with a casino? That's got license to print money.
He's a clever, devious idiot, is the way I would describe him.
Cunning, but not smart.
Cunning.
Yeah.
There you go. Yep. Yep. He knows how to push people's buttons. And he knows how to tap into anger and fear.
On any level, he's a stable genius. It would be in his ability to manipulate others to follow him, because he's proven to be good at that.
Yep. Although I have a theory. If he continues to slip in the polls to Harris and drops to, say, I mean, I saw one the other day where he was down 7 points nationally. If he drops to 10, watch the paralysis that's going to set in among Republican leaders. They will not know what to do because he's got a big following. The securely red, no matter what states, you know, those congressmen are going to, they'll have to stick with him, I think, and they probably will.
It does look as though a lot of rodents are leaving the ship.
They're not talking much. They're not talking very much right now, at least not to the media. I mean, I'm seeing a couple of faces that I don't remember seeing before in terms of surrogates, you know, talking heads, you know, touting or trying to sell Trump. A lot more are being very, very quiet.
The whole political landscape has so changed in 8 years in the Trump era. I mean, you no doubt have family and friends that are Republicans that you think well of. I certainly do. And yet, this is not the MAGA crowd. And it's time for the decent right. GOP members like Adam Kinzinger to come forward and just say, no, this won't do at all.
Right. That's right. And I think that's what was so powerful. That to me, that was probably among the most powerful aspects of the Democratic National Convention was the fact that it was, you know, laced with decently prominent Republican faces giving speeches, public speeches. Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see how the, you know, what the polls do over the next couple of weeks. So a lot of it will turn on how people react to the debate on September 10th, which I think Trump is frozen with fear about that one. I think he's just absolutely frozen with fear.
Well, you know, in the last debate, again, I think we talked about this last time. I mean, the last debate was curtains for Joe Biden. And looking, I listened to it the first time and watched it. I made myself watch it from start to finish just to assess the performances. And Joe Biden did look old, and he did look confused, and he did look like he just, you know, he didn't look good, and that's why he's not running. At the same time, his opponent was just confidently spewing nonsense, lie after lie after lie, and wasn't called on it. We've got to see a different way of doing it. Well, of course, I think debates are just for show. I mean, debates are just theater anyway, but I guess it can change some minds if somebody, you know, says something that someone really agrees with or disagrees with. Well, it can affect the outcome. But honest to God, Harris and the organizers of the debate have to not let him get away with this.
Right. That's the key. She's got to call him on it. It'll be thematic. Every 2 minutes, she'll wind up having to say, now what Mr. Trump told you is a lie. Let me tell you the truth.
But think back to Trump's debates with Clinton and Biden. I mean, it was all the same thing. He went out there and just went off on, and Clinton tried to do that and just say, well, these are facts in Donald's mind, but not in the real world, and didn't get that far with it because, again, the organizers of the debate let him go off. And remember him, like, stalking behind Hillary Clinton?
Oh, yeah.
It looked like he was about to attack her physically.
Yep, and she should have stopped that too. She should have just said,
"What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? Can I help you? Are you lost?"
I'm hoping that Harris will open this debate with thanking Trump for not making any effort to grab her below the waist. I think that'd be just, you know, just thank you very much. Of course, if you had, my husband would have clocked you. But you know, just want to put it out there. Thanks for behaving.
Yeah.
And we do. Oh, it's sort of funny. I have to laugh that an awful lot of people get their news from, like, comedians these days and various websites, some of which are quite excellent. And we need more of that. We need more. I think what we need above all else is for Trump to become the object of ridicule that he should be. He should not be allowed to say these crazy
Correct.
Things. And the mainstream media will say, well, Trump, of course, was getting personal again, when they should be saying, well, Trump's getting Uncle Donald's getting crazy again.
Yeah.
That's what they should be
yeah.
saying.
Well, yeah. Well, that was just nuts. What he just told you was absolutely nuts.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yep. Real simple. Three words, you know, just real simple rejoinder.
One of my favorite comic takedowns recently was, I forget who did it, But they noted that, you know, Trump's fan base being what they are, he went to a rally in Pennsylvania and misidentified the state as North Carolina, leaving all the rally goers thinking, we're in North Carolina. Which is probably about right. You know what I think we should do at this point is pivot out of the world of Trump craziness and talk a little bit about the world of Bobby Kennedy craziness, because now he appears to be a major player in the Trump team.
Yeah, Bobby Kennedy and how J.D. Vance tries to talk his way out of Bobby Kennedy. It's pretty amusing trying to reconcile the positions of all these, well, I guess weird is the word, right? Weird, creepy guys is
You know, the word weird is working for the Democrats. That's one they really need to emphasize. It seems to be getting under Trump and Vance's skin.
That's the word that sort of neuters them, because their whole premise is that they're mainstream. They're not weird. They're articulating the thoughts that most Americans hold, which of course is nonsense. But the notion that they're weird is that's actually quite troubling to them. And you know, watching Vance try to square his position, whatever it is, or Trump's position with Robert Kennedy Jr.'s position, for example, on vaccines, is laughable. You know, you got the guy who came up with Operation Warp Speed and boasted about, you know, the importance of vaccines. That is Trump, with Robert Kennedy Jr., who thinks that vaccines are killing all of us. But Trump will give him a spot in the administration, you know, to take a hard look at this stuff.
Yeah, we really need a world class quack heading the Department of Health and Human Services. That would be a big step forward.
Boy, and he is. Just ask any of his relatives.
Well, just read what listen to what he says.
Yeah.
And then his running mate Shanahan, yep. Sergey Brin's ex. I mean, she's got billions of dollars by virtue of being his ex. And she made the comment recently that, well, you know, there was worry here that we would help elect Harris. And I forget her exact wording on it, but it was like, oh, this was a worry that you were concerned about that. So best to jump to Trump. And I guess she's fully on board with this move to Trump.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, and all Robert Kennedy Jr. is trying to do is find some place where he can somehow remain relevant to something. Because right now he's a laughing stock of the world, and all Trump wants is, another vote. Okay, there we go. Maybe he'll get me another 1 or 2%. You know, anything to win.
But it's so funny how the analysis of RFK has shifted. It was at first felt that as a Democrat he'd be stealing votes from the Democratic ticket. And then there was a lot of people pointed out, well, you know, he's really more in sync with Trump and could be stealing more votes from Trump. But, you know.
Well, he's got a problem now because he's trying to get off the ballot in a couple of swing states and they won't let him off. So he's going to remain on the ballot. I've forgotten which two. There were two swing states that he's on the ballot.
Yes.
You know, that's a problem. That's a problem for him. So I don't know. I mean the whole business about the bear in Central Park, taking a chainsaw to cut off the head of a whale. And
wait! You've never done that?
Boy, I mean, his daughter's the one who told that story. She must have been scared to death when she saw him doing that. I mean, I don't know why the guy isn't institutionalized, frankly.
Well, our great friend of this program, Greg Pallast, recently put out a piece on Bobby, who he said was a good friend, and just said, look, he's gone nuts. I know quite a few people that know him and are to some degree like him a great deal, fans of him. And I've just said, how about it, guys? And that's their out, is to say, well, he's gone nuts. But it's worse than that.
It is worse than that. It's weird, you know. It's weird and it's creepy. I mean, just imagine all the things he's done that we don't know about.
Richard Nixon said, I guess, many years ago that scandals last about 2 years in the public's mind. You know, if you get 2 years out of from a scandal, then you're okay, which certainly seems apropos to our discussion here about COVID. But I look at, like, Bobby Kennedy overdosing on heroin on an airplane flight that they've got to, like, put the plane down, and then they arrest him, and he does no jail time. He gets, like, probation. A heroin addict for, like, age 15 to age 29? Can you think of anybody else who would still run for public office with that in his resume?
No. And he does the heroin while he's on a plane on his way to a rehab facility.
I'd forgotten that aspect. I'd forgotten that part.
Yeah, it was his one last blow.
Let's talk about another issue that's near and dear to your heart. You've written extensively about the connections between Trump and the Trump campaign and various factions and oligarchs and Vladimir Putin, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, it seems that Trump and Vance and RFK are just saying, you know, this war in Ukraine is ridiculous. Just let Russia get what they want and let's move on.
Right. Well, that's consistent with the way Trump has approached Putin from the beginning, right? And he didn't do anything about Crimea. He inherited that, admittedly, but he didn't do anything to discourage Putin. He says that Ukraine never would have happened if he had been president, which is probably true, because he would not have defended Ukraine. He would have said, Vladimir, you know what? I've always thought that Crimea and Ukraine should be part of Russia. And, have at it. We're not going to mess with you. We're not going to get involved. We won't get involved in that. Right. And if you think about the first impeachment, the whole Ukraine, you know, could you do us a favor and, you know, create problems for Biden, and then maybe I can give you the arms that you need to fend off Russia.
Right. Talk about the 2 year time span of scandal per Nixon. It's like they impeached Trump over the fact that he was trying to shake down Zelensky.
Right. Exactly. In the so-called perfect phone call that even a couple of Republican senators thought should drive him from office. And then, of course, having survived that impeachment, he's emboldened to do it again. Well, he survived Trump-Russia with no impeachment at all. Then he survived, which made him more brazen in terms of Ukraine. Then he survived the Ukraine impeachment, which made him more brazen in terms of January 6th. Now that he has survived impeachment over the January 6th insurrection, what's left? What's left that he can't do, particularly in light of the way the Supreme Court has now given him a blank check, essentially, in terms of immunity? And I think the whole Ukraine problem is... He's right that it would not exist, because he would have just rolled over. The United States would have lost all of its respect in the world, at least in the Western world of democracies. And Putin would have said, thank you, Donald, and been emboldened to do who knows what next in terms of continuing to swallow some of the other Eastern European countries that were formerly part of the original Mother Russia.
Well, having just visited Georgia and Armenia and Azerbaijan and seeing the attitude those countries have toward Russia, it's like, well, it's sort of understandable that Russian aggression is something that is not favored. And it used to be the Republicans used to not be in favor of Russian aggression, but per the monkey see, monkey do principles of following Trump, they're now towing the line.
Yeah. Well, it's not a Republican Party that's consistent with any of the conservative principles of what had once been the Republican Party.
No,
and that's the point that Kinzinger and Cheney and, people who, frankly, I would not find myself in agreement on most matters of policy. But, you know, and there was a time when I would have said, well, who can be against democracy? Turns out a lot of people. Right. A lot of people, if Donald is,
right.
Which is, you know, this just goes to the whole problem of, you know, the unwillingness of people to just stand up and do the right thing. And you can't, you know, once you lose a democracy, you know, you can take generations, and sometimes it never happens at all, to win it back.
Right.
And there's a fundamental failure. You know, I think it's almost an educational system failure. We don't do a good job of teaching history in the schools anymore. Everything is all focused on the STEM subjects and science, and we don't we've lost context. You know, Arthur Schlesinger Jr. used to say that, you know, history to a country is what memory is to an individual. And if you don't have a good sense of it, of where you've been, you have very great difficulty figuring out where you're going or want to go.
You know, we've only got a few minutes left, and I think we should pack that with the legal matters of Trump and what Jack Smith is now doing to take that take the Supreme Court ruling and saying, well, you know, a president, if he's acting officially, he's pretty much immune. And Smith is now saying, well, what I'm talking about is not official, and let's go through it. And he convened a new grand jury. He's filed new charges. And this is kind of a new ballgame, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was a very clever move on Smith's part. You know, the judge in the case wanted to hear from both sides about what the appropriate next steps should be in terms of figuring out how to parse the earlier indictment in light of the Supreme Court's ruling, and Smith did a very, very, very smart thing. He said, "Tell you what, let's just get a new grand jury to look at this stuff, so no one can say that it's tainted. Anything we do is tainted that way." And we'll get a new grand jury, and we're only going to give them the opportunity to indict based upon things that we believe in good faith are clearly outside the scope of any immunity that Trump can claim. And that's a clever thing to do, because he got it done before today, which is when the date was due for both sides to tell the judge, well, how do you want us to proceed? Now they can just say, here's how we should proceed, Judge. We've got a brand new case. It solves all of the problems of the earlier indictment that the Supreme Court ruling threw at us. And what do you have to say about that, Mr. Trump? And, of course, Trump will say that nothing satisfies them. The whole case should be thrown out. But that'll be their position all the way to the Supreme Court until they can get Clarence Thomas to say something about it.
Well, how soon will this go forward, given the glacial speed of our courts? When can we see him, Trump, indicted a second time?
He's been indicted, I think. I think this indictment that just happened is an indictment. So the question is, you know, how fast will the case proceed, you know, before it reaches trial? And I would say it's going to go through the appellate courts and all the way to the Supreme Court. And I think you're looking at least a year before you get
there. Oh, God.
Yep.
That's so depressing to hear.
Well, that's why he's running for president again. It's really the only reason. Because if he loses, the January 6th case is going to land him in jail.
Do you think so? Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I do. And here's why. The conviction that he's already got in the state court case qualifies as a prior conviction for purposes of sentencing guidelines in the January 6th case. I think the evidence in the January 6th case is overwhelming against Trump. And I think when you get to the sentencing phase, he's going to be looking at the sentencing guidelines that apply to someone who's already a convicted felon.
Right.
And that's going to up significantly the likelihood that he winds up in prison.
Interesting.
So I think there's a decent chance.
Interesting.
I think there's a very decent chance that he winds up in prison.
And, of course, before we go, let's give you a chance to educate our listeners as to the websites of yours they should be checking out.
Sure. The one is called The Belly of the Beast, which you can reach by Googling thelawyerbubble.com. You can also find my timeline and other articles on billmoyers.com. That's most pertinent. You'll find on the Moyer site. You'll find all of it on my site.
Stephen Harper, it's been illuminating as always. We've gone a whole hour on this, but we could probably do another hour and not even begin to exhaust the subject.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure talking to you, Doug.
You've been listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett.